What's going on, everybody? And good morning. Today is Wednesday, April 30th, and this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And I hope you all had a glorious Tuesday, had a good start to the week. We're at the midweek point. Looks like the weather's going to be nice the rest of the week. So we have an interview. I've been meaning to get to this interview, but a lot has happened, obviously, with the draft and then the White House and everything. But Vic Fangio was on a podcast with, now that I guess we're a political pod, Josh Shapiro. And it was a super fascinating interview. So Vic Fangio, whenever Vic Fangio talks, I always think he is worth listening to. He's honest. He really just does say what is on his mind. I'm sure there's sometimes he, you know, gets into coach speak and stuff, but you know, when Howie talks, I think Howie sometimes, you know, has a message he wants out there, has an agenda. I think Nick, you can tell sometimes, is saying what he's supposed to say or thinks he's supposed to say. Vic Fangio just tells it like it is, I think. So Vic Fangio, I think this was maybe a week ago, week and a half ago, was on a podcast with Josh Shapiro. If you want to listen to Josh Shapiro's podcast, go look it up. I'm not really sure what the name is, but it was an awesome interview. And there was three clips, and then another one that I'm not going to play the audio for, but I thought was an interesting point by Vic Fangio, maybe a sign of things to come. So first, Vic went into a little bit about how he was hired by the Eagles.
Everybody wants to talk about the Birds. Everybody wants to talk about this great run. I actually want to start, though, at the beginning of it, and I'm sure you're not aware of this story, but Howie's a buddy of mine. And after last season, it's not the Super Bowl season, the one right before that, you know, Birds come out, I think you're down in Miami at the time. Birds are, I think, 10-2 and then completely fell apart, lost in the first round. Philly's getting on Howie and Jeffrey and the whole, you know, Sirianni, the whole crew. And I never want to talk shop with Howie. So I don't ask a lot about football, but I just said, hey, how you doing? And he goes, I feel really, really good. I'm like, you do? Because that was a rough run over the last few weeks. He goes, we got Vic Fangio, and we're going to build back, and we're going to be way stronger next year, and we're going to win a Super Bowl. But I thought it was interesting how he's always optimistic. But he didn't talk about a player. He didn't talk about a new scheme. He didn't talk about whatever. He talked about you. And he said you were going to be the key to helping build this team back. So I'm hearing that from Howie, and I wonder what Vic Fangio is feeling right now, getting that call down in, I guess you were in Miami at that mm-hmm. point, and knowing you're going to come back to the Birds. Take us through that.
Yeah, actually, I called him and Nick first because I knew I was going to be leaving there, and they knew they were looking for a new defensive coordinator, so the timing matched up, and they didn't believe it at first, and I said, no, this could happen. So they were excited. I was excited.
Yeah.
I was excited to get back. You know, I like the people within the Eagles organization, yeah. Howie and Nick, Jeffrey. But going back to where it all started, too, because, you know, I grew up a Philadelphia fan in all sports.
Yep.
And actually worked for the Philadelphia Stars back in 1984,
right.
The old USFL.
Sure.
I don't know if you remember that.
I sure as heck do.
And
watching them at the Vet.
At the Vet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, where it all started for me in pro football, that's where it's going to end, and I was excited about that.
So, you know, Vic has talked a lot about how he's from Philadelphia, and it means a lot for him to come back. And, you know, I think the expression is used a lot of times in sports, like it just made sense for both sides. I think this just genuinely made sense for both sides. And you could tell that it did because when Vic knew he was going to be looking for a job, his idea was to go to the Eagles. And when the Eagles needed a defensive coordinator, they, from according to Vic here, and I believe him, were like so thrilled it could be Vic that they couldn't believe it was real. Obviously, Vic Fangio worked with the team in 2022 in like a consultant capacity, had, you know, things maybe potentially gone different with the Jonathan Gannon timeline. Maybe Fangio's a defensive coordinator in 2023. But regardless, it was always somebody they wanted to hire. And Vic talking about how, you know, he wanted to go there and the Eagles wanted him, I think that really matters. We talked about this with the draft picks, how Jahad Campbell's an Eagles fan, how Kyle McCord is an Eagles fan. And I think all the draft picks will play hard and it's their profession and all those things. But you just can't tell me you're not giving 5% more if you're playing for a team that you really love or a team that, frankly, like, you know more about. Like, Vic Fangio has probably followed the Eagles outside of, clearly, when he's in the NFL, he follows them. But growing up, he followed them. Like, he understands references. He understands the city. And that's the same will be for Jahad Campbell and Kyle McCord. Now, Kyle McCord not going to play like Jahad Campbell presumably will early on. But regardless, I just think it does matter when you have a history with the city. So thought that was cool to hear Vic talk about that. Next up, this was a really good question by Josh Shapiro. He asked Vic Fangio like what the process was like when he got to Philadelphia in terms of building the Eagles defense. And I thought there was one key thing in here Vic said. Curious if you'll pick up on it. So here's Vic Fangio talking about building the Eagles defense.
Well, you come back home. Get to put the Eagles green back on. But you also had to rebuild a defense, mm-hmm. right? Defense had gotten old. They weren't, you know, putting up the kind of numbers they needed. They weren't playing great team defense. You went from having a defense that really struggled. We know where this ended. You had the best defense in the NFL. How did you just go through that process of thinking, how do I rebuild this? Where does it require new personnel versus a new scheme? How do you think about that?
Both. You know, one of the first things was with Howie, who I've known Howie a long time, and we have a good relationship. You know, and he knew this, but we needed some new players to inject into this defense. And, you know, particularly in the secondary.
Yeah.
And, you know, Howie's never had a history of drafting DBs high. And he did that in this past draft, first and second round, which is a credit to him. And, you know, and then we added a guy in the third round. So we had three rookies that played significant time for us.
Yeah, they were amazing.
Yeah. And then we installed the system. Luckily, I had some coaches that had worked with me before that I was able to get to join the staff. So there was some continuity there between the coaches and me, not with the Eagles, but in other places. And the players really bought in early. And just went to work.
Yeah.
And, you know, we, ended up in the Super Bowl, obviously, and it became kind of a storyline that we didn't pressure at all or blitz at all.
Yeah. I'm going to get to that.
And yeah. We were a fundamentally sound team and just went back to making sure we were doing things the right way all the time.
So it's very clear when Vic got there, he was like, we need new talent. Like, that's very clear. But he said that focused on the secondary. And you look at it, like, Slay ended up staying. Slay's gone now. Bradbury never played. They brought in a new safety. It ended up being Chauncey, right? They brought him back, someone Vic was familiar with from 2022 when he was, I know he was working with the offense, but he was in the building with Chauncey. And then obviously they go out and they draft Quinyon and Cooper. And I think what you can hear in there is just the influence that Vic Fangio has on the defensive side of the ball in terms of personnel. You look at the draft they just had, four defensive players taken with the first four picks. It sounds like when Vic came in here, they made a conscious decision. They needed to overhaul the defensive side of the ball. And in the year he's been here already, they have two new corners. They now are going to have a new safety. They're going to have two new starting linebackers. They're going to have two new edge rushers. They're going to have probably one new defensive tackle, depending who starts next to Jalen Carter. So they have gone about completely reshaping it. I just think it's interesting to hear Vic talk about his process, and how he was clear to Howie, like, I need some new talent. I thought this clip from Vic Fangio was really cool. Vic talking about game planning for the Super Bowl. And in there, I think you can hear like why Nick Sirianni and Vic Fangio are similar in a lot of ways. They have differences, but they're similar in a lot of ways. So here's Vic talking about game planning for the Super Bowl.
It's leading up to the Super Bowl.
Well, I think first off, we had to get a mindset with our players that what it would take to win this game, not just schematically, but emotionally and mentally. And we showed them some stuff from the previous year's Super Bowl where San Francisco lost to Kansas City in the Super Bowl and some critical plays why they lost, that we couldn't make those same mistakes. I went all the way back to when I coached in the Super Bowl in 2012 with the San Francisco. And we had a great defense back then, but we didn't play well early in the game, and showed them. Well, I actually got the video from that game and showed them some of the mistakes we made in that game, which are elementary mistakes. Again, going back to, you got to do the fundamental things right. The right way. And showed them those, you know. And the guys over at 10 days, I say 10 days because we didn't really start preparing with the players until Wednesday or Thursday okay. of the previous week, just kept working on their mindset.
Interesting.
You know, to what it would take to play and beat these guys who, yeah, Mahomes is, I think if you ask 100 people who's the best quarterback in football right now, probably 99 would say,
yeah.
98 would say Mahomes, you and I would say Jalen Hurts.
Exactly.
And so it was a tall task, and but it was doable. I was confident we could play good. Did I know we would play that good and or win the game? Yeah. No, but I was confident we could play good.
But let me push on me.
We've talked about this with Nick Sirianni, mostly when it comes to like the what does he do thing, like what's his specialty. And people look around the league and go, well, you know, Sean McVay, he's good at a lot of things, but you know, he's great X's and O's guy. Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel, like, or you know, Mike Tomlin, obviously a great defensive mind, but also like leader of men guy. Like everyone has their thing, right? And Nick has a lot of things. He's a Super Bowl winning head coach. He's been to two of them, so obviously he's good at a lot of things. But I think in my years covering Nick, what his thing is fundamentals. Nick believes if you do the fundamentals correctly, that you don't need to like put up a bunch of, you know, bows and ribbons, or that's not the expression. You know, like a lot of like, you know, eye candy with the offense or with the team in order to win. The team that will win is the team that is fundamentally sound, that takes care of the ball, doesn't commit stupid penalties, like executes. That is what Nick believes, right? And so you hear that with Vic. That Vic was basically like, the key against the Chiefs was the fundamentals, is just playing our game. Now, clearly, having a great team of players helps you do that. When you have a great team of players, you can focus on fundamentals, right? If Nick had the worst roster in the NFL, I still think his message would work. And I think that style of like, take care of the football, be great tacklers, like all those things, I think that would make any team better. But obviously, because of the talent, they're able to do it. So I just, you know, Vic and Nick seem so different from the outside, right? Vic is like this, like kind of quiet, like, you know, curmudgeon-y, and I mean that in a nice way, like guy. Nick Sirianni is like all over the place, hands waving, like super emotional on the sideline. But at their core, I think that's why they work together, is that they just at their core love like teaching football and like the fundamentals of football. And I think you hear that in that answer, that he didn't feel like he had to reinvent the wheel to beat the Chiefs. He felt like they just had to do their job. And obviously they did that in a very, very big way. So another interesting part of the podcast, I'm not going to play the audio for it, but in there, Vic Fangio talks about, I think he's talking about the draft, and this was recorded prior to the draft. And he kind of like says that, you know, talking about all the draft picks. And he says, you know, sometimes you get a lot of young guys, but you need some veterans. And he says those defensive draft picks could be used as trade pieces. And he goes on to kind of say, like, Howie, and if he doesn't get the people he want in the draft, like, Howie will work hard to use them as trade pieces. I thought it was pretty clear from there that if like, Howie is probably saying to Vic Fangio, let's try Sidney Brown, right? Let's try Kelee Ringo. And if those don't work out, we have these picks to go get somebody. So wait for a little bit, see how they play in camp, see how they are in OTAs. And if you don't like what you see then we can go out and trade for somebody. And that's the sense I've gotten this offseason, is that they are willing to give young guys a chance, but then if it doesn't work, they will go out and they will make a trade. And I think when you hear Fangio talk, he's been told that as well. So we'll see what ends up happening. But I do think that the chances the Eagles trade for a defensive starter between now and the end of the season and week one, in my opinion, are high. I think it'll be a safety, or I think it'll be a corner. I would be pretty surprised if they are so impressed with Sidney Brown or Andrew Mukuba that they don't go get a safety. And I'd be pretty surprised if Keeley is so good that they don't feel the need to go get a corner. I think they're going to give him a chance, but I don't get the sense that they're like definitely thinking they're going to be the guys. So on the other side, I was on the WIP afternoon show on Tuesday and got into a discussion with Spike and Ike about Jalen Hurts, as one naturally does. So that'll be on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors.
I got to keep on risen. It's the WIP afternoon show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
They've stayed relevant.
It is Tuesdays with Elliot. They took a dip, and then they came back.
Yeah.
They came back. They got to get rid of Big Justice, though.
Someone say they have risen.
They have risen.
That was a good Easter joke. I saw a lot of that. On
Dynamite Easter joke.
Yeah, a lot of Twitter jokes with that.
Val, my wife and our sister-in-law, Paige, were in...
Happy birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday, Val. Yeah. We're in New Orleans, and they saw a He Has Risen t-shirt.
Yes, I saw this post
as well.
Did they get it for you?
No.
It's so funny, because I was going to message... They must have been Paige that posted it. Like, you need to get this for Spike.
But I would have worn it. I would have worn it.
I was expecting to see you in it.
So, real quick, and I don't want to do this the whole time, but the idea of... Jalen and prove it year next year. And you saying he proved it last year. You can debate whether he next year's a prove it year for him. I think it is. I think if the defense isn't going to be as good and the team's going to rely on the offense, it's going to rely on him to throw more. He's going to have to take more on his shoulders. There's not going to be as much Saquon. I think it's definitely that next season is on him in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You saying that he proved something last year, he certainly had a great NFC Championship game and a great Super Bowl, but his season did not prove anything.
Well, so obviously I disagree with that. So a couple of things. One, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but if you look it up, like, he wins a higher percentage of shootouts than most starting quarterbacks, and when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more, they have a better winning record than a lot of other starting quarterbacks. So in terms of him having to prove he can win shootouts,
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying he has to prove he has to win a shootout.
But that is what you're saying. You're saying if the defense isn't good enough, can he carry them to wins consistently? That's what you're saying.
Right.
And I was just about to say, I acknowledge there's a difference having to do it 16 games as opposed to like three times a year, right?
Thank you.
So I agree with you that if he every week has to get this team in the 30s, like, that's going to be hard. I do think, though, that is setting a bar that most quarterbacks can't reach, for what it's worth.
Well,
a lot of quarterbacks, when they have to throw the ball 35 times or more...
But see, you're jumping again.
Why?
Nobody's saying he has to throw 35. They're saying...
That's what...
No, what I'm saying is, it's very clear. What I'm saying is, what happened in the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl was not him throwing it 35 times. It was him throwing it effectively 24, 25 times. Mm-hmm. There was an extended period of the season this year where he was throwing it 17 times, 18 times, taking a ton of sacks. And you saying him getting into the 30s is not realistic. Let me say, they scored 27 points a game last year. So if you don't think his increased value can mean three more points when the Detroit Lions are scoring more than 30 points a game, the Buffalo Bills are scoring 30 points a game, and the Buffalo Bills far fewer weapons than Jalen has.
I agree.
He absolutely can be worth a quarterback going from 17 passes a game to what he did in the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl can absolutely be worth 3 points a game and absolutely have them win scoring 30 points a game.
I feel like what you're asking him to do, you're also in your thing referencing him doing it. He
twice
did it. Correct. But what games this year did they need him to do what you're talking? Now I know you're doing what he doesn't need, right? But like,
but they will need next year.
Okay, and we'll see if he can do it there.
Yes, and so he'll have to prove it.
So that is.
So he'll have to prove it. There it is. Thank you.
No.
Discussion over.
No,
he'll have to prove it. We'll see if he can do it. So he will have proven it.
A prove it year is different.
Right, Jack? Am I wrong? Am I right? He'll have to prove it.
He has stuff he has to prove. That is not a prove it year. He is one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. I think he's number two.
Can he have the year he had last year and then be as good as people think that they
are? Yes, of course.
There's no way.
Why?
Because you just said their defense is going to be worse.
Saquon is not going to be as good as he was last year, and the defense is not going to be as good.
We think. I agree they probably won't be. But
I'd be shocked if they are.
But again, and I know you guys hate when I bring this up, but like, the things he did last year, he took care of the football. He was good against the blitz. Mm-hmm. Like, those
he was not that good against the blitz.
He was six in the NFL against the blitz.
No. He when pressured,
that's different than blitzing. It is, just for what it's worth. If you want to talk about
his sack rate when blitzing was like 28th in the NFL, and there are stats now that show that taking sacks is worse than throwing interceptions.
Okay, so last year, Jalen had a passer rating of 115 against the blitz, which was 6 in the NFL.
Yes,
so,
but that is passer rating.
Yes, it
doesn't
right.
count sacks.
It does not count sacks. You're okay. right. But he had he completed over 70% of his passes. He had like 12 touchdowns to one interception. So what I'm saying is going into next year, if Jalen takes care of the ball, is good against the blitz, those are massive things. So I'm not as concerned or interested in like him proving if he throws it, whatever number you want to pick, more times per game. Like I didn't, last year their passing offense definitely had stretches where it struggled. I agree with you on that for sure. But also, every single time they had to pass the ball, they were good at it.
But
like,
I think that is a false, like that is a false claim.
But
had to pass the
is.
Ball. They're an NFL team. They always have to
but
pass
that's
the
like
ball.
Saying to someone like, can you run a 10-minute mile? It's like, well, only when I have to. Well, it's yeah, that's the only thing. Like whenever I'm asked to do it, I can do it. Like what's your saying?
Wait, okay, all right, you want to take races? Do you think that a marathon runner goes into it and says, I only have to run 1 second ahead of the number two guy, or I have to run my best race?
Of course, it's run the best race.
Okay, yeah. So he has to play his best game. It's not about throwing it when he has to. It's about the best version of the Eagles' offense is with him throwing the ball effectively.
Correct, but that same racer, if they win the race by 1 second or by a minute, they still won. So to your point about can like next year with Jalen, can he win a certain way? There's not a way in the NFL we have not seen Jalen win. Like, does that mean he can't do it? Like, we'll see if he can do it over longer stretches. Sure, but honestly, in 2022, he threw the ball a ton, and they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. So we've seen
that was
him do
3 years
it.
Ago.
Right. But,
and he followed it up by leading the league in turnovers. And then for the first four games of last year, leading the league in turnovers. And the team instructed him to throw the ball.
So hold
less.
On. But when you say like a prove it year, that's implying he hasn't done it.
Right.
What you're asking him to do, you just said
he's done
it
before.
He did it in 2022.
Yeah.
And
well, Max Kepler hit 25 home runs in 2022. Do you think Max Kepler is proving that he is a power hitter now?
No,
or do you think this year Max Kepler has to prove what he did 3 years ago?
But it would sound foolish if I came up here and said Max Kepler cannot hit 25 home runs when he's already done it. Now, he might not do it next year, but obviously he can do it.
No. Obviously, he did it. It doesn't mean he can still do it.
But he's
all right, let me jump in here a little bit. Let me jump in here a little bit. Because I'm obviously leaning with Elliot on this. I don't think anything he's being asked to do is unattainable. These things he can do. In 2022, he threw the ball 30 times a game for 15 games. 416 attempts. It was 30 times a game in 2022. He had a completion percentage of 66%, over 66%. More impressively, his average per completion was 8 yards. That was one of the tops in the league that year, and he only threw 6 interceptions. Now, he's had the average completion be 8 yards or better twice.
And I think last year he had it. So,
I was just about to say one of them happened to be last year. So he threw the ball on average 31 times in 2023. So 2 years he's thrown the ball 30 or more times. Last year he threw the ball 24 times a game.
And if we look after the first four games, it was probably lower than that.
Yes, but here, you're right, it was.
Yep.
But here's the thing. The key to all this is the turnovers.
Yes.
So it's really him taking care of the football.
Yes, because you would admit that last year when we were talking about him, you would reference 2022 and say, where is that guy?
Yeah.
So the ability for him to do that again, clearly something happened. Whether it's defenses adjusting, whether it's something that happened with him, something happened between 2022 and 2023 that did not allow him to be as effective a player as he was in 2022. His best year, if we're talking about regular season, was by far 2022.
Yeah.
He had a better year in 2022 than he had in 2023. He had a better year in 2022 than he did in 2024.
So I will not fight you in
2023. But to me, in 23, it was the turnovers.
Yes,
but that's part of it.
I know, but if we think about it, like, one point, Josh Allen led the league in turnovers for like a 3 or 4 year period there.
Yep.
Then he cut the turnovers out. And he wins the MVP.
Sure.
So if we get Jalen to take care of the ball, in other words, I'm saying from a physical standpoint, he has the ability to do it. It's more or less, meaning some guys can't throw the ball as much because they aren't as good.
Right.
His job, his thing is going to be taking care of the football when he has to throw
it. And I would even say coming into this year, people had questions about Josh Allen in a lot of ways.
Some people, they voted him the most overrated player in
football.
So I think that there's...
Which is, you know, like, ridiculous.
You
but.
Say like there's something that happened, right? And I know you're not literally saying one thing, but I do think it's a lot of things. Like, so from 2022 to 2023, he went from his awesome year, right? And then the league adjusts. Like, so CJ Stroud's rookie year. After that, if you would have told me I could pick any quarterback in the NFL to start a team with, I would have made a strong argument for CJ Stroud. Last year, he took a step back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think 2023 was a combination of things. One, the Super Bowl hangover is very real.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I do think the league adjusted to the Eagles and they did not adjust well back, and that was in on Jalen. Three, I do think he got way more reckless with the football, and maybe that's because he was, I don't know, like feeling himself coming off 2022. Who knows? But the turnovers became a problem. But last year, you're right, the beginning of the year did not start out good, and that's part of it. But I think you lean too much on like this massive shift to the running game. They had Saquon Barkley in a great running game, and Jalen still had to make a lot of big throws, and he still took care of the football. And as good as Saquon could have been, if Jalen wasn't really good, they would not have won. That's the reality.
We had to make throws against Cincinnati to win that game.
Correct. And the issue is also they were up big in a lot of these games.
Yeah.
I know, like, it is just true. When you're killing nine minutes of the fourth quarter, your pass attempts are going to be down. But again,
that's not even true.
That is what happened. It's literally what happened against Baltimore, and it happened against Pittsburgh.
Elliot, if I'm making too much of the shift in offense, you're not making enough
of
it.
So it's probably in the middle.
They write stories about their shift at the bye week.
Yes.
Like it is the most famous bye week in Philadelphia Eagles history.
You also only talk about the shift to the running game. Jalen also was much, much smarter with the football afterwards.
But he was, you're saying smarter. He was taking more sacks and he wasn't throwing the ball as much.
Correct.
That's just what happened.
He was throwing the ball less. I agree
with
that.
And taking sacks.
Yes, he was taking sacks. But also, when the ball was being thrown, he was much smarter with it. And so, as awesome as Saquon was, and as awesome as the defense was, I think there is a strong argument to be made. The number one reason the Eagles were as good as they were last year is because they consistently won the turnover battle. And that begins with Jalen not turning the ball
over. Throwing the ball. The Twitter question is brought to you by Mark's Jewelers. Show the mom in your life how much she means to you this Mother's Day with a special gift with your purchase. Details at marks-jewelers.com. Can I read the poll?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right. You don't even have your own headphones. You're trying to act like the host of this show.
Yeah.
All right. Are you disappointed in the Eagles offseason? 87.6% say no. Go ahead.
I forget what I was going to say.
All right.
No, this was it. I'll look this up. I'd be curious to know where they ranked in passing attempts for the first half in a year. Like last season, where they ranked.
The first half of games.
Yeah, exactly.
First half post bye.
Sure. Yeah, I'll do post bye.
Okay.
Because I firmly do believe that they threw the ball less in the second half because they were up in these games. Now, like other teams were up big too, right? But they had a running game to lean on other teams didn't have.
All right. So let me ask you this about the draft.
Yes.
Just so we can put this Jahad Campbell thing to bed, because I need you on the record.
Okay.
All right. So prior to the draft, you nor any of your beat reporter brethren, as they were slobbering over
your guys' friends,
Walter Nolan.
Right.
nobody mentioned Jahad Campbell.
Correct.
So they draft Jahad Campbell, and you say, I believe, on your podcast, Go Birds, where you can get wherever you get your podcast, comes out every day, that you believe it was a great pick because they see him as an edge. So my question is, if he ends up primarily being an off-ball linebacker, is it still a great pick?
No. Okay. Unless he's a... I mean, look, if he's a great player, then you can argue any pick's a great player.
Yeah.
Like, they could have drafted any position in the first round. If the guy's a Pro Bowl player, it's a great pick.
Yep.
But I firmly believe they drafted Jahad Campbell because of his edge potential. I think they believe he can be a good defensive piece and can play linebacker. And I think he will play linebacker next year for a decent amount of snaps. But he would not have been their pick if not for the edge potential that he has.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. And is that a failed evaluation if he doesn't end up playing mostly edge? All right.
Just like with Jordan. Honestly, he doesn't. To me, it's not.
Not if he's Roquan Smith or Fred
Warner. If he's
Warner.
A great player. But it's similar to the Jordan Davis pick in the way that when they drafted Jordan Davis, he had to be something that he wasn't in college.
Right.
Campbell in college was not a great edge rusher. They're hoping he can become a great edge rusher.
The other thing that I don't think we've heard much of, I don't know if you heard Mayock on the show yesterday, but we asked Mike about the injury thing.
Yeah.
Because he made an interesting not surprising, but when we first had him on draft time, he said that the deal with injury stuff is every team basically gets the same injury information, and you have to decide how much it means to you. And I said, he had, Mike had Jihad Campbell going ninth to the Saints. And I said, okay, so he must have slipped because of the injury. Why would the Eagles look at the shoulder thing and think it's not a big deal? And he said the week prior to the draft, there was another knee thing that had gone on. Mm-hmm. Now, he had arthroscopic surgery on his knee in 2023. Apparently, it wasn't that big a deal. But Mayock said that there was another knee thing. Do you have any insight on that knee thing?
I don't have insight on the knee thing. Okay. The only information I know, and this is not from the Eagles, is that, like, I believe Jihad Campbell will be in training camp. And I don't think... Look,
we mean in training.
Like, I think he will be participating in training.
So week one of the Eagles season, do you believe Jihad Campbell will be on
Barring
the active
roster? Setback?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So you think he'll be on the active roster?
Yes. And so real quick too on the injury. So I don't know if you guys talked about this, but Albert Breer wrote about it. Did you see this? He said
I saw the clip.
Two shoulder injuries and two knee injuries is how he framed it, right?
Right.
And he said, but the Eagles can take that chance because they don't need the pick to hit. I completely disagree with this, like, as a luxury pick. For them to continue to keep being good, this has to hit. Like, you can't just miss on picks because you have talented players on your roster.
Especially when you're banking on the draft to replenish the talent.
So there's a lot of pressure on Jihad Campbell to be good. This is not like, if it hits, it hits.
It's not.
The window can close quickly when you start missing on your picks.
Wait.
And Jihad Campbell has to hit.
Well...
He does. Well,
I'm with you in a general sense. We all wanting to hit, but you can't tell me somehow if he doesn't hit. Say the medical concerns come to fruition. Mm-hmm. Knock on wood. We don't want it to be there. But two shoulder injuries, two knee injuries, it's there. What do you think? The Eagles are going to crater because Jihad Campbell is a medical concern and he can't stay on the field?
So, no, I don't think they're going to crater.
Then that's what Albert Breer is talking about.
No. But that, to me, in what Albert Breer is saying, that's like 2025. But the Eagles, to continue to be good.
And they got 30 picks where they can pick another linebacker next year.
And they have to hit on these picks, is the point I'm making. Is the talent they have on their roster right now will only take them so far for so long.
That's like saying if they had taken a corner. You're going to tell me they had to hit on that pick or else we're in trouble?
That's
not true.
But the biggest asset they had this offseason was this draft pick. The best chance they had to improve the team for next season and for the future was this draft pick. They didn't spend big in free agency.
No, they didn't. That's why they took a position that maybe or maybe not works out. We don't know if the...
Well, no, I think it's a very Eagles pick. It's a high-risk pick. I think Jihad Campbell is a high-risk pick.
Yeah.
And I like that about it. I like taking a big swing, especially that late in the draft. But if that big swing misses, it sets the team back.
It's a low risk. It's only a high risk because he's a first-round pick. And it's the second-to-last pick in the first round. So it's basically a high second-round draft pick, which we would agree all these guys basically graded out as... Second round draft, because you guys aren't franchise changing players. I didn't see a lot of those in the first round of this draft. I just didn't.
And I think Campbell actually could be one of them. Like, I think he is one of the guys that has a high enough ceiling.
A franchise changing player.
Yeah, I think
shown himself to be that.
He's
going to be a nice player.
I think,
but he hasn't been Abdul Carter.
Yeah. I think because of his physical makeup and ignoring the injuries, I'm talking like when he's healthy, his game is a higher ceiling in my opinion. Because I agree with you, this draft was not filled with special players, right?
Yeah.
Like Mason Taylor at 32 or 31 would have been such an underwhelming pick. Jihad Campbell, to me, has a high ceiling, but also has a very low floor.
It's a luxury pick.
But I don't think you can view it that way.
Keith in Clementon was Jihad Campbell's sixth grade teacher. Keith, you're on WIP.
Do you like the pick?
Hold on, let me tell you off the speakerphone.
Move by him.
What's going on, man?
What's up, Keith?
Doing well. Hold on. Sorry.
Okay, first of all, what subject did you teach?
I was his math and science teacher in sixth grade.
Oh, now those are the best classes.
He was a solid A, B student. Right. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. He was a what? Say again?
He was a solid A, B student.
Ooh, yeah. We like that.
He was smart. He was articulate. He could always, whenever he had a problem to solve, he was really good at it.
Now, when he was doing math and science, did you feel like he was more of an edge or a linebacker?
true answer would be Edge.
But, okay.
He probably was the biggest kid in the class, though, right?
He was. No, he wasn't. He was tall, but he wasn't like big.
Okay, was, yeah, I got you.
Height.
Yeah,
it does seem like he has a big personality. Like, and even at just the two times,
I was gonna say, yeah. How was his personality? Could you tell then?
He has. Like, I think
not
he has,
you. I'm talking to the teacher.
You don't even know him. Would you shut up, Elliot? Jesus.
Yeah, turn off his mic.
Shut up.
He wasn't shy.
Okay.
We got you. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, he had a problem. He went for it. Like he was such a good kid, man.
Okay.
And, like, when I saw him, I actually had to talk to another teacher. She's like, do you know this guy that was that drafted last night was our student? I'm like, oh, my gosh, it was John Campbell.
That's amazing. And what school is this?
This is Winslow Township School Number 5. I was a sixth-grade math teacher. If he's hearing this, hello, John. This is Mr. K.
There you go. Awesome.
I lived maybe 10 minutes away from that school.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I lived down in Sicklerville. I lived down in Windham Hill.
Yeah. We that's off of Sicklerville Road.
Yep. Down there in Sicklerville. Well, Jahad played against Elijah in high school.
He
played against my son in high school.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did he? Oh, wow.
Did he stand my son out played over there. Yes, he was. Did? Yes. Well, he and the other kid from Boston College.
Oh, Ezeraco.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Keith. All right, Mr. K, rather.
It was good talking to you guys.
All right,
you too,
thanks,
brother.
I'm calling ever one of your college shows, by the way, but I figured I had to today.
Well, we grade you as an A-plus caller today.
Yeah, I love hearing
he's a solid AB student, like, no joke.
I love it.
Every subject, math and science, and language arts, too.
Wow.
I didn't teach him that stuff, but...
all right, Mr. K. It, appreciate you. Don't be a stranger.
I'll have to ask Jahad about this.
All right.
You remember Mr. K from
good student.
School number 5, whatever the name of that school was.
Winslow.
Yeah.
Winslow School number 5.
Winslow School number 5 really rolls off the tongue.
What about Winslow School number 3?
Yeah, is that on the hoodies?
Well, Timber Creek is a pretty good high school over there.
Yeah?
Is that Winslow? Or is that a different
Well, that's the high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the high school.
Good draft for South Jersey.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Like, we got to get Southeastern PA back up.
All right, Elliot. Well, the Go Birds podcast, Go Birds Daily, every single
day.
You can get in your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Another excellent appearance by you.
Jahad will be a fantastic player, but if he's not,
no worries.
We'll get another one next year.
And he does have a big personality.
Yeah, big personality. AB student. Solid AB student.
Love it.
Brian Baldinger joins us next. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.